Hello?
It's working.
Hello? I'd like to talk a little bit tonight about chesed versus inclusion. In Perkei Avos, Shimon HaTzadik teaches us that along with Torah and Avodah, Gemilus Chasadim, acts of kindness, is one of the three ethical pillars upon which the world stands. We encourage children from a very young age to put a penny in the pushka. We send students on chesed missions. We organize coat drives. We name buildings and programs after those who are particularly charitable towards a given cause. We hold dinners honoring those who give themselves for the community. Inclusion, too, has its place in our tradition, sometimes even bringing about changes in halachic reality. To give just one example, we know that a kohen with certain physical anomalies that may be off-putting to people is disqualified from duchening, giving the priestly blessing. The Gemara tells us, however, that Rav Huna and Rabbi Yochanan allowed such kohanim in their towns to give the priestly blessing. And when asked how that could be, the answer given is that these particular kohanim were familiar in their towns. People knew them. They were included. And therefore, their mum, the blemish, the disability, was not considered halachically significant. So we see that both chesed and inclusion have their place in our tradition. For those whose chesed inclinations lead them to get involved with people with specialized needs, there's a plethora of opportunities in the Jewish community. Visitation programs, peer-to-peer mentoring, inclusive summer camps, Torah learning programs, shadowing and shul youth groups are all common opportunities aimed at including those with specialized needs while encouraging a spirit of acceptance and kindness amongst our typically developing youth. And to be sure, involvement in these chesed activities has had a tremendous and wonderful impact on the acceptance of those with developmental differences in the Jewish community. There are literally thousands of former camp counselors and youth group shadows and graduates of day schools with inclusion programs and former participants in inclusive summer camps who today sit on yeshiva boards and advocate for accepting children with specialized needs, who coach little league teams and try to make sure that everybody gets a fair shot at playing, or simply who don't stare or turn away or step back when a person with Down syndrome or autism or cerebral palsy enters the room. The experiences that many of you have had in our community to interact with people with developmental disabilities has succeeded not only in bringing about a generation of both typically developing people and those with disabilities that sees inclusion as normal and expected, but have educated their parents to embrace similar attitudes. Now that people with developmental disabilities are accepted as part of the community, however, the question becomes, accepted as what? There's a famous story that I heard in the name of the Satmar Rebbe, Rav Yoel Zatzal, and if it wasn't about the Satmar Rebbe, then it was about somebody else. And if it didn't really happen, then it could have happened. The story is that the Satmar Rebbe was once putting on his coat, and a chassid came to help him, and the Rebbe said, "No, it's okay, I got this." But the chassid insisted on helping the Rebbe. And the Rebbe kept saying, "No, really, thank you, like I'm good." And upon the chassid continuing to insist on the opportunity to serve his Rav, the Rebbe finally said, "Enough, I'm not an esrog." He said, "I'm not your chetzeshel mitzvah. I'm not your mitzvah object." Similarly, how do we present engagement with people with intellectual and developmental disabilities in our community? Is it something you do on a Sunday morning as a mitzvah or during a special inclusion Shabbaton, or worse, to fulfill your school's chesed hours requirement? Is it something you do during lunchtime so that the students in an inclusive program feel like they're part of our school? Is it something you do for a summer or two because it's fun, or to look good on a shidduch resume or on a graduate school application or for the status sweatshirt? Is accepting and including people with specialized needs in our community and our lives something we believe is normal in its own right? Or is it something we see as extra because, you know, we're nice people? There was a time when society as a whole was not very nice to those with specialized needs. There was a time when society in general, and the Jewish community in particular, where the most challenging obstacle facing those with specialized needs was exclusion, was prejudice. To be sure, even in those darkest days, when it was not uncommon for Jewish newborns to be abandoned in hospitals because of their disabilities, or sent to institutions because they were told by their doctors, by society, and yeah, by some rabbanim, that this is what's best for their families, this is what's best for the community. Even then, there were heroes of chesed, parents, rabbis, professionals, who spoke out for the inclusion of those with specialized needs in the community. Many started the very chesed organizations that we still have today, that provide people, both with and without disabilities, the wonderful opportunities for community participation mentioned earlier. And we owe those heroes tremendous gratitude and hakaras hatov for bringing the community where it is today. However, as much as we needed chesed to displace prejudice against those with specialized needs then, it's now time, I believe, to question the role of chesed as the primary motivation in this endeavor. Much like developmental centers of 500 people were an improvement over institutions housing 5,000 people, or sheltered workshops for those with disabilities were a needed first step that eventually led to supportive, competitive employment opportunities. And the same way that those cutting-edge programs of the past would be viewed as setbacks if proposed today, I believe that promoting engagement with people with intellectual and developmental disabilities as a chesed qua chesed has run its course. It's fulfilled its purpose. And to a very large degree, it often hurts more than helps the people we aim to support. I'll give you an example of this that I see frequently, that I've even seen in this room. I was once teaching a social skills class for individuals with specialized needs, and prior to the first session, I was discussing the goals of the class with a social work intern who would be sitting in on the class serving as a classroom aide. And during our talk, a service participant, somebody taking the class, arrived early and approached us. And with no introduction and no greeting at all, he just said, "I like spaghetti." So the social work intern, two-thirds of the way to his master's degree, turned to this man with autism and said, because he's kind, "I like spaghetti too. What kind of spaghetti do you like?" And the man with the diagnosis said, "I like spaghetti with meatballs." And the man without the diagnosis said, "I like spaghetti with cheese." And after this brief exchange, the man with the diagnosis turned and walked away, while the man without the diagnosis, the social work intern, pivoted back to continue our conversation about social skills development. And the continuation of the conversation went something like this. I said, "What was that?" And the kind intern said, "What do you mean?" And I said, "Well, I was talking to you about our class, and someone came over and said, 'I like spaghetti.' And you just responded to him. You just turned to him. Why would you do that?" So the kind intern said, "Because he's my friend." So I said, "He's your friend?" And he said, "Yeah." And I said, "So you mean like if you wanted to go to a movie on Saturday night, you would call him? Like he's that kind of friend?" And the kind intern said, "No." And I said, "So you mean like if you have like a personal problem and you want to talk it out with someone, so like that kind of friend?" And the kind intern said, "No." So I said, "Well, then what exactly do you mean when you say he's your friend?" And the kind intern said, "Well, we've been going on Shabbatanim together for years." So I said, "Oh," I said, you mean he's your disabled friend?" And then I asked this very well-intentioned, sensitive, kind-hearted intern, who I'm sure grew into a fabulous social worker, I asked him to tell me what he would have done, how he would have reacted had an actual friend acted in the manner of this individual with autism that he knew from his volunteer work with a chesed organization promoting social mainstreaming of individuals with disabilities. And he responded that he most likely would have said, "Don't interrupt, I'm working, I'll speak to you later." And then I explained that we would soon be starting our social skills class for people with specialized needs, and that we could give lesson after lesson after lesson on appropriate social behaviors with drills and exercises and homework and role-playing and assessments to make sure that the students are, in fact, learning what we're attempting to teach them. But if we then allow the participants to behave inappropriately in the real world, none of it would matter. The truth was that the service participant who began this exchange reflected many strengths through his inappropriate behavior. He showed he was social, he was friendly, he sought out companionship, he had an opinion, he was able to express his opinion clearly. These are fine strengths upon which to build appropriate social skills. However, reinforcing inappropriate social behaviors, such as interrupting, is not an effective way of doing that. So where does this leave us? At the McCourt College Experience Program here at YU, it's not uncommon for staff to approach a student and say, you know, that joke you told in the base medrash, or that way you acted in the cafeteria, it wasn't really so appropriate. And for the student to reply, yeah, but the students all laughed, or they let me sit with them. And for the staff member to say, yeah, but why did they laugh? Like, why were they nice? And for the student, after being in the program for a few years, to respond, sometimes with a smile and sometimes without, because I have autism. If we want to truly be accepting of people with disabilities and support people with disabilities to grow and reach their full potentials, we have to recognize that while prejudice may have been the most challenging obstacle facing those with specialized needs in the past, today's greatest obstacle to full inclusion might very well be misguided chesed. People with intellectual and developmental disabilities do, by definition, have challenges that often require the help and support of others. And those on the lower end of the developmental spectrum, for lack of a better term, may require more chesed than others simply to survive. The question, though, is how to provide chesed to all people, including, especially, those with intellectual and developmental disabilities, in a manner and level that is appropriate to the need and that forwards the overall objective of supporting lives of opportunity and inclusion. So I want to give three concrete suggestions as to how to do this. One, chesed should be aimed towards normalization. Allowing a person to engage in inappropriate behaviors on the grounds that he's special may allow good-hearted people to tolerate those with behavioral differences for a little while and in specialized settings, but it won't teach the person how to act effectively or promote her acceptance in the real world. It's true that we need to educate society to accept behavioral differences and tolerate behaviors that may be atypical but that can't be changed. We also may need to accept and tolerate some atypical behaviors of people who, for whatever reason, aren't ready to accept or can't yet learn from a more refined brand of chesed. But tolerance should be viewed as the lowest level of acceptance, not the ideal. There's no kindness in allowing someone to engage in atypical behaviors, which could be addressed or remediated, and that when not targeted for improvement have a high likelihood of leading the individual to a life of mere tolerance at best and community exclusion at worst. Second, chesed should be person first. There's a huge difference between a person with a disability and a disabled person. When I describe someone as a person with a disability, I'm stating one fact about that person, that he has a disability. And to be sure, that fact is, in many contexts, a highly significant and important piece of information. When, for example, a person is applying for services, or when patients or accommodations may be required to level the playing field and allow that person to succeed. But nevertheless, it remains one fact, one facet of this person. It does not at all express whether or not the individual with a disability is a good dancer or knows how to cook or enjoys learning or comes from a loving family or is fun to be around or any other aspect of the person's life or identity that may or may not be relevant to the situation. When I label someone as a disabled person, on the other hand, I'm defining that person by their disability. When you define a person by his or her disability, you lose the opportunity to judge the individual as a person with all the varied nuanced traits the person possesses. You're defining him not by the traits we all share, our personhood, but by what makes us different, his disability. Thinking and speaking person first provides the opportunity to get to know the person and treat the person as an equal, which brings me to the third point about chesed, which is that chesed should include people with disabilities in and not separate them from the community. Another way of saying this is that inclusion has to be real. In fact, inclusion might not even constitute a chesed. Going back to the Makor program, parents often ask us during like the application process if their sons can audit a YU class so that he'll like feel like he's really in YU. And we always respond no. Why? Because if you can attend a college class and follow that level of academics, then you should apply to college. Our program isn't meant to make anyone feel like they're doing anything. And if we had our Marcor students included in yeshiva college classes, they might feel good for a day or for a week or for a month. But eventually, they're going to get bored. Or worse, they're going to spend their whole day becoming anxious and trying to hide the fact that they don't actually understand what's being taught. Furthermore, the college students in the class, you guys, would totally welcome our students as a chesed. He doesn't really belong here, but we're nice guys. We want him to feel included. And when the Makor student would then go to the baking club at night or the zoology club trip or cheer the basketball team at a game, you guys would still see him that way, as the chesed guy from class. He doesn't really belong. He didn't belong there. I guess he doesn't belong here. But well, let's make him feel like he does. That's not our model. Instead, we have our own Rebbe. We have our own teachers. We have our own classes. On campus, in the classrooms, we have our makom in the base medrash, just like every other shiur. You can use it at night, it's okay. Unless one of our guys comes, then you have to give up the seat. We're part of campus life, but because we are not included when we appropriately shouldn't be in the academic piece of college life, when our guys go to the clubs at night or to the basketball games or eat at the caf, as they're included when it's real, when whatever impairments they may have aren't actually disabling, they should be, and we have found often are, included as equals, as peers. It's not a bad thing that chesed be normalized. We should try to instill in ourselves an automatic reaction to help those in need. But people with intellectual disability are not always in need, and inclusion perhaps should not always be viewed as a chesed. In a chemistry class, cognitive impairment matters. At a baking club or in shul, it might not. Sometimes in some contexts, a person's disability really does require specialized care. Sometimes the only thing a person with a disability needs to be treated like everyone else is to be treated like everyone else. Or an accommodation so she can be treated like everyone else. There's a difference between being treated differently, which is sometimes necessary, and being treated as different. Treating people differently is important because everyone is different. But being treated as different makes a person into the other. The people we're focusing on right now because they aren't like us. And that mindset, that type of chesed, is never inclusive. Viewing our interactions with people with intellectual and developmental disabilities merely as acts of chesed turns people with specialized needs into objects of chesed. Considering inviting a classmate with Down syndrome to lunch as a mitzvah opportunity turns the time spent with that person into an activity. But people with specialized needs aren't objects, and the time spent with them should not be viewed as activities. People with specialized needs are people first, and true inclusion has to be based on that principle above all others. I want to say one more thing about inclusion and difference. I used the term normalization before. In the field of psychology, the principle of normalization means that we treat people with disabilities the same way we treat people without disabilities. What often isn't mentioned, though, is that if we treat people with disabilities the same way we treat people without disabilities, then simple arithmetic would dictate that we should treat people without disabilities the same way we treat people with disabilities. I remember very well when I worked in a camp for people with specialized needs, for lack of a better term, an adult staff member, right, a non-counselor, came to me all confused and said, "I don't understand. I see these counselors giving their summer, giving themselves 24 hours a day to take care of their campers, feeding them, showering them, supporting them in every way, an outpouring of chesed. But the co-counselor, who's only a little bit different, has no one to be with on his day off. I see counselors," she said, "with tremendous patience spending time with the camper that uses a communication board, but who have no patience for the waitress who stutters. We don't include people with disabilities because of their disabilities. We include them because they're people. So it really goes without saying that we should treat other types of people the same way. That real inclusion goes in both directions. It's okay to say to a MCOR student, like you would a friend, kindly and with sensitivity, I really want to talk to you, but you can't interrupt my learning during Seder. Or I like you a lot, but I'm busy right now, let's meet for lunch. Or even with sensitivity and kindness, I want to talk to you, but you need to brush your teeth first. And you should learn from your inclusive experiences that inclusion isn't about how you treat people with specialized needs. It's about how you treat people. And if you can learn about your own ability to tolerate difference by your time spent with people with disabilities, you should use that self-knowledge and that experience to accept and include people with other differences as well. Let me close by saying that in addition to inclusion, there's another term that has somewhat fallen out of use, but that I really like. And forgive me if you've heard me say this before. That word is integration. The reason I like the word is because I'm a psychologist. And in psychology, the word integrate means to make into a whole by bringing all parts together, like an integrated personality. When you think about it then, when we talk about community integration with regard to people with disabilities, it's not the people with disabilities that are being integrated into the community. It's the community that's being integrated. It's the community that's being made whole by bringing all parts together. Without integration, it's the community itself that's incomplete. That's less whole. So let's try to make our community whole by bringing together all of its parts. Let's make our yeshiva whole by bringing together all of its parts. Let's do chesed with those who need chesed, but let's really think carefully about when and with whom and how we do it. Myron.
Yeah. Thank you very much.
Thank you.